Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Andrew Horn, who is an entrepreneur, speaker, and executive coach who Forbes recently called the Dale Carnegie for the digital age. He built his last company, Tribute.co, to eight figures, millions of users, and landed a number 256 on the Inc. 500 before stepping down to focus on coaching and growing in real life, the Institute of Relational Leadership. Andrew spends most of his time helping high-impact entrepreneurs and executives to master a relationship-centric path to success, fulfillment, and leadership excellence. He frequently speaks for organizations like Google, the Cleveland Clinic, and he's even been featured on the homepage of TED.com. He's on a mission to create art that reminds him how he wants to live, and his creations revolve around three core pillars: radical authenticity, personal integrity, and relational mastery. He is someone who is really creating a tribe of honesty and realness and vulnerability with men, and what it means to share and be your true self, something I very much honor, respect, and am so excited to have him on the show. So let's get right into it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Andrew Horn here, who I've been back and forth trying to get this wonderful, amazing man on my show, and he has been just gracious and kind and amazing, and I can't wait for you guys to get that from him. If you don't know him, don't follow him, check him out, of course, and everything will be in the show notes always. But Andrew, can you introduce yourself to the listeners before we get into the wonderful conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Andrew Horn. I'm an entrepreneur, coach, author, and spent about the last 9 years of my life building a company called Tribute.co, which is the largest platform for creating love-filled group video montages for the people you care about. For the past 6 years, I've also been working as an executive leadership coach and facilitator of men's retreats, something I'm sure we'll talk about on our show today, and also writing a book called Social Flow, a four-question framework to create confidence, meaningful conversation, and connection wherever you go.
Amazing. So can we talk a little bit before we get into what you do now? What kind of got you to this point? What pushed you in this direction of life?
I would say it was an awakening to the power of service. I would say that I was pretty lost through most of my kind of teenage years and even through college. And I just had a moment right after I graduated from college where I didn't have any job prospects I was excited about, decided to drive across the country with my dad to Alaska after reading the book Into the Wild by Krakauer. Highly recommend if you've never checked it out. And I just really had a moment of asking a question about his time in the military. He was an experimental test pilot, and he really was talking about how proud he was of his time there. And he pushed it back to me and he said, "What's the last thing you've done that you're proud of?" And I didn't really have an immediate answer. And I just sat there for probably 20 minutes thinking about it. And then what came up is I had an experience when I was a junior in college volunteering with an organization that did adaptive athletics sports for kids with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And when I thought back to my time there, it didn't really hit me while I was doing it, but that was the first time in my young adult life that I really felt myself motivated intrinsically, that I looked back at the work that I had done, raising tens of thousands of dollars for these events, working directly with the families, and I felt good about what I had put my effort into. And my dad very astutely just looked back at me and he said, "Well, why don't you do more of that?" And so that led me to really kind of transcend my pleasure-seeking habits of partying and making quick money to really committing myself to service. And I started a nonprofit that did adaptive athletics for kids with disabilities in the city, mm-hmm. which is still operating. And then I have a mom who's a 12-time published author in the realm of communication and interpersonal dynamics. And I have struggled significantly, and this is probably what influenced my work today more than anything else, is I struggled significantly with social anxiety and shyness and loneliness growing up in Hawaii for most of my formative years. And so I took that same impact that service and social entrepreneurship had on my life, and I started to apply it to the transformational arts. How could I study the art of meaningful communication to help people to get stuff done and most importantly, connect with other people? And I had built up a lot of tools and techniques to do that, to speak from a stage, to raise money, you name it. But up until the time that I was still, you know, in my late 20s, my internal world didn't really match some of the success that I was achieving on the outside. I was still filled with the limiting internal dialogue you know, I'd feel tension and anxiety in rooms of people that I perceived to be more successful than me. I loved giving talks, but before giving a talk, I'd get stressed out. I'd be sweating on stage. And it was really this experience I had experiencing a modality called Gestalt communication, Gestalt awareness practice, that fundamentally shifted my approach from one of packaging myself to one of connecting with the authentic version of me that's here right now in this moment, getting out of the way and giving that a voice. And I'm happy to tell more stories about some pretty transformative experiences that happened in that workshop and since then. But it really shifted my approach to really, like, I'm so much less interested in packaging the self. What I'm really interested in is how can we get in touch with who we really are in this moment? And how can we effectively and generatively give that a voice to facilitate real intimacy, real trust, and real human connection? And that's what so much of my work revolves around now, whether it's, you know, like my executive leadership coaching, whether it's working with men on retreats, which I'm getting ready for one next week. And so that's really what's so alive for me right now in this stage of my life and what I'm most excited about.
Dude, I am so pumped for this conversation because you really, if you ever, and I know that social media is not the truth of life, but if anyone is listening right now or listening later, if you just take a look through Andrew's feed, to me, the word is just authenticity. It really is. You show the authenticity of love, the hardship of life. You show the authenticity of smile and happiness. You show the authenticity of self. If no one can see the wacky jacket of like flowers or the hats that you wear and the colors that you let pop through, like that energy comes through a lot of your pictures. Now, of course, they're curated and all those things, but to me, there's a purpose behind it. It's not just that you're being fake because you show a lot of parts of you. What were some of the coping skills or the combatants that you've created to really push on that social anxiety or that fear of authenticity? And why do you think that maybe men struggle with that fear?
Yeah, I mean, foundationally, it is just a desire to belong and the idea that if people knew the real, raw, emotional version of ourselves, that they would reject us, that they wouldn't love us, that they wouldn't accept us. And you know, what I've learned through my study and practice of Gestalt and what I've seen time and time again is that when we are courageous enough to connect with and then share that real version of ourselves, what we end up doing is not only impacting the people around us much more authentically in the way that we like without all the effort, but we create space for other people to be themselves as well. I think that's the real shift here is that a lot of people who think about communication and mastering some of these skills, they're doing it on the surface because they want to feel more confident. They want to be more successful. And I think that when we look at human motivation in general, the most sustainable source of motivation that we have is purpose, is a connection to something greater than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so when we're able to realize that our authenticity, when we have compassion, when we care about other people, can be and is an intrinsic act of service because it creates space for them to be themselves. And I think that all of us want that when we think about our kids, when we think about our friends, our family members. It's like, do I want these people to feel like they can be honest? And when I come back to time and time again, is that if you have that desire in your relationships, the only way to ethically pursue that path is to do it yourself, is to be real, is to be honest. And something spectacular opens up when we do that, you know, not becoming a fire hose of emotion and saying everything. I think that there is a skill and a level of discernment that is required. Like when we tap into the full spectrum of our emotional, intellectual being, but that's, you know, what I care so much about. So I'm not sure. What was the question again? I want to make sure I really touched on what you were
doing. No, you did. You asked beautifully. I'll ask more specific then. But, you know, by the way, before I get to that, the image I always have of the fire hose, and I always talk about this with clients of mine when I'm working with them about expressing emotions, especially men or couples, because I do specialize in work with couples every day, is the idea of like people or partners wanting their partner to be more expressive, more emotional, more in tune, more aware. And then when they actually get that, they're like, whoa, that was too much, right? I can't handle that. That was like more than I expected. I wanted a little bit more, not everything, right? So there's something we have to realize is that when people in our lives are asking us to be more authentic or more real, a good pushback is, okay, well, what are you actually expecting me to do? because just because I say I want more of you doesn't mean they might be ready for all of you. And that's okay. But it means that we have to learn parts of us that we're willing to show, able to show in dosages, and then giving the other person the ability to be comfortable with that opening. Yeah. And the jokey thing that I say is, if you ever watch Friends, and there's a very famous scene that it gets passed over, like Bruce Willis comes on the show, and he's dating Rachel.
It was Rachel. Okay, got it.
Right? And then like he's like, oh, he's such a hard guy. He doesn't talk about his emotions. I want his emotions, right?
Yeah.
I think they were actually either posted, I don't know what the deal was, outside of the show. And Monica says, just ask him for more.
Yeah.
So Rachel goes, I want to see, and he cries for two episodes. For like the whole rest of the episode. Yeah. And Rachel then complains, I can't stop it. I can't shut it off. Right.
Totally.
So we don't want that, but we want to be, I think the key for a lot of men, I'd love to hear your thought, and then I'll ask the question, is it's not that you are a hose of emotions, but you are aware of all your emotions and you accept all your emotions and then express it in the smart way versus hiding it, shoving it down and not being aware of it. So how do we tap into that when we've been like, this is like your bread and butter, right? You have these beautiful retreats. I can't wait to talk about it. I love the idea of having a tribe of men and comfort in that space. I know I try to create that in my own life personally in my small community. But when we are just constantly shoving it down deep, how do we pull it out? How do we get down there and pull it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that first we can focus on like a two-step process. There's the internal, then the external. So I think of the internal as what I would call emotional mastery. I think of the external of what I would call relational leadership. And so to really take responsibility and ownership for everything in our life, including the quality of our relationships, our business, you name it, the first step is just feeling your feelings fully and opening up to the importance of that. And I think that what's really helpful is like, it's important for people who've never formally been taught emotional literacy to just understand like, what is the value of feeling my feelings fully? And so ultimately, our feelings are an approximation of our state of being. It's basically us helping to understand like how we're feeling in this moment. My favorite definition of what an emotion is an emotion is a state of being. And we've created this taxonomy of words to help us to categorize this so that we can connect and share our experience with other people. And so within Gestalt awareness practice, like one of the famous adages is what we don't express, we suppress. And so if we are having an emotional experience that we're unwilling to experience, and a lot of those that often crop up with men are shame, guilt, sadness, fear, right? We're a lot more comfortable oftentimes expressing anger because it's culturally accepted. But so what happens is that we're not willing to experience those emotions that are present, then the wisdom of those, why they are present, is not able to imprint on our actions or our beliefs moving forward. So we're less capable of taking aligned and fully informed action. And so if we're thinking about, you know, men oftentimes like hyper analytical, it's like we want the most information to make an informed decision. So if we're not feeling our feelings, we do not have all of the information available to us to make the best decisions and take the most aligned action in our life. So there's a whole process of just opening up to feeling our feelings, becoming present to what that is. And the simple thing that I would invite men to explore there is really just asking themselves the question in these moments. And you can download something called the Wheel of Emotion, which is very helpful. If you were to ask a lot of people, like, what are you feeling? They'd be like, bad, great. But if you can download something called the Wheel of Emotion, put it at your desk, and like you look at, there's such a nuanced and vibrancy that comes up when we have more ability to articulate like what our experience is. We're able to share and understand ourselves more deeply. And so it's like, what do I feel in my body right now? Do I feel tension? Do I feel lightness? Like, look at whatever you feel in your body. And then ask yourself, like, what is the emotion that's most present? Just building up that skill of being able to name the emotion that is there, allowing yourself to see where that resides in your body. And that in and of itself is a practice that will pay so much dividends of just sitting there, identifying, and then being with it. Can I relate to this emotion with curiosity? Can I feel this fully? Can I allow it to be here? Can I ask myself the questions of, does this have a message for me? If this emotion had a voice, what would it be saying? What does it need? You're developing a curious relationship with your emotions as opposed to an avoidant one. So once we can develop that internal practice of really becoming connected to our emotions, then comes up, well, what's the practical value of this for leading my life and my relationships forward? And so there's where I think a lot of the mastery and the discernment comes from. Because when people said, like, I want all of you, I want your authenticity, they want all of you, but also there are parts of us that are very human, like our criticism, our judgment, that they don't actually want and aren't helpful for leading us towards connection. And so the framework that I follow and study is nonviolent communication, which is, again, just a practical framework that helps us to acknowledge that judgment, you are X, Y, or Z, is a real experience. Like, judgment making is essential for humans to live and thrive and grow. But when it comes to sharing ourselves, our needs, what we want from people, judgment and criticism just gets in the way. Because if we're categorizing what someone is, who they are, we immediately put them on the defensive. So rather than connecting with us, hearing us, they're defending themselves and their position, their idea of who they are. And so nonviolent communication, think of this simple framework, OFNR, oftener. So observations, feelings, needs, requests. So what we can do is look at, rather than categorizing someone with a judgment, it's like, you're always late. Well, they're probably not always late. But when we look at observations, and I love this idea, and this is something I work on with all of my leadership clients, is the idea of objectivity, of becoming unarguable with. It's this idea of, can I make statements to my partner that are objective and that people can't disagree with because they have actually happened? So if you say you're always late, someone can disagree with that. The studio audience, if everyone's watching what's happening, they're gonna be able to say, like, well, no, last Tuesday he was on time, right? But if I say, hey, last Thursday, like, you were 15 minutes late, that's an objective observation of something that had happened, right? So that first step is crucial. The next one is owning our feeling. Because what happens, again, if we immediately make a judgment about someone, they're in defense mode. But if we want to create connection with people, we need to become empathizable, which is not a word. I just say that because we get it, right? It's like, we make ourselves easier for people to empathize with us, to want to take action, when we simply start by sharing our feeling. So it's like, hey, when you relate last Thursday, I was really frustrated, right? And again, objective, that's how you were feeling and you're sharing it. They can't argue with that and say, you weren't frustrated. No, like, that's how I was feeling. That's your objective experience of your, well, subjective emotional experience. But so now you share, that's your feeling. And a fun thought, I am friends with a guy named Tom Bond, who runs the Nonviolent Communication Center of New York. And he has this great concept called needs-based consciousness. And it's the idea that every emotion we experience is the product of our needs being met or not met. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. If you think about it for a second, it really does check out, right? If I'm feeling joy, my needs for connection or adventure or health are probably being met. If I'm feeling sad, my need for safety or protection or esteem are probably not being met. And so what happens is, like, what we're able to do when we look at needs is to look at, especially relationally, like, what do we need? We're taking responsibility, not for judging other people, but sharing what the need was in a specific moment that was not met. So looking at that example of someone being late, like, hey, like, last Thursday, when you said you were going to be here at 7 p.m., you're 15 minutes late. And, like, I needed you to be on time because it helps me to trust you. And again, like, that's not arguable with. It's like, I needed you to be on time because it helps me to trust you. And that's important to me, right? Like, my needs there. I need you to be on time. I need to be able to trust you. You get to share those. And then the next one, and this is where, again, it's called leadership, because we're taking responsibility, not just for critiquing or criticizing people, but one of the most powerful frames is to really look at this frame of by me or to me living. Is life, are my relationships happening to me or by me? And can I take responsibility for creating the relationships that I want? And so this is where we come into requests of the oftener kind of protocol. And it's, what do I need this person to do moving forward? So it's like, hey, if you're going to be late in the future, could you at the very least, like, give me a call or let me know ahead of time? It's a practical request. It's objective. If they're going to be late, I'd like you to call me, right? And so in all of this, like, what we've done is, again, we've been objective. Like, people can't argue with this. This is our experience, our needs, our request. And it's one of the most powerful frames to simply come back into taking ownership for the quality of our relationships, transcending a victim mentality of like, these people are X, Y, and Z, and this sucks. But to saying it's like, here's how I start to connect with my emotional experience and understand how that is what's going to drive me towards deeper connection in my relationships and building everything to a place where I'm happy and content with what I have. So that's like the first step of what I'd look at in relational leadership, of just being willing to feel our feelings and to share them with a layer of discernment and without the criticism and judgment that often leads to more disconnection than bringing people together.
Yeah. And I love that whole breakdown. I think it's really beautiful and very powerful to practice that, because it takes out a lot of factors or X factors that sometimes cause so many arguments and disconnect within a relationship.
Yeah.
And it can really help just take out those things, so you can actually get to struggles within actually the communication itself, or what's not actually being heard, or interpretations when things are kind of very simplistic and straightforward, and using that model versus, well, of course I'll be defensive. You attacked me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's out of it. Well, of course I would say this, you're being ridiculous. Like, it just takes out all of the extra narratives that can be created, and then can kind of really boil down to some very practical ways to help with communication and themselves. You know, I saw you have a sticker on your water bottle and the hat. The holy shit, we're alive. Can you talk about what that is and why that's a part of something that you really embrace?
Yeah, man. I think foundationally it's because I do a lot of work with people in the realm of human transformation, and at the end of the day, the most powerful point of awareness for people to live rich, fulfilling lives is gratitude, is appreciation, and when I think of holy shit, we're alive, I had a powerful experience in a medicine ceremony about 6 years ago. And in that ceremony, I just got a whisper from the universe, and it said, holy shit, we're alive. And I just started saying it over and over again. And I was so profoundly impacted of this awareness that, hey, like, for whatever ills may plague me, whatever shortcomings I may have, like things I haven't done, like, I am alive. I am here at all, and so connected to the miracle of that, that I started shouting it, and the people around me started shouting it too. And so now this whole room of 30 people are just screaming, holy shit, we're alive. And it was just this really beautiful recognition. And I think that, and you know, again, it's like, it's funny and like crass, and but it really does bring us back, brings me back, and I think hopefully for a lot of others as well, to this awareness of like, we are here, and that is a gift. And whatever you're going to experience in your day, whether it's challenging, useful, unuseful, to be tapped into that awareness that you're alive, you have an opportunity to do anything at all, and that's pretty awesome, just makes everything better, you know? And obviously through Tribute, it's helped almost 7 million people now to like share their love and appreciation with the people they care about. I think one of the simplest and most effective things I do just to be happy in my own life is wake up in the morning and say 3 things I'm grateful for, and do the same thing at night and do it with my son and my partner. And but it's just a reminder to be grateful that we're here at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to talk a little bit about these beautiful retreats that you run and the community that you create. You know, you said it was this inspired by Benjamin Franklin and this powerful group of people. What inspired to start that tribe and that beauty that you are creating in the world?
Yeah, you know, so much of the things that I create in my life, I've kind of synthesized it this way, that I am here to create art that reminds me how I want to live. And I think that experiences, retreats, like art is just really kind of creativity in and of itself. Fine art is art that's created for consumption, in my estimation. And so I had this powerful transformative experience studying Gestalt communication, Gestalt awareness practice. I decided to get 8 of my guy friends together to sit in a weekly men's group. And after the first retreat, I remember just with a simple container and protocols to just sit with our emotions, to share those transparently without, you know, any sort of packaging or anything else on top of it. I just looked at these guys who I knew very well. And one of the guys at the end of the group, he just kind of paused for a second and he looked at all of us and he's like, man, I feel so much less alone. And all of us hit our chest, which is a symbol of empathy in a men's group, right? It's like, I feel you, I'm there with you. And I just, again, experiencing that myself, I wanted to share that feeling with other men. So it's like outside of this, it's like, I'm not making any sort of, at that point, hypothetical statement about like what the world needs from men or thinking about the continuity of modern men's work and like what's most needed right now. I was just saying like this experience has been so powerful, so insightful, and I would love to create space for other men to experience something similar for themselves. And so that led me to head off and to create the first Junto in early 2018. And fortunately, I had a really great mentor, Arjuna Arda, who wrote the book Conscious Men with Jack Canfield, who has led thousands through these types of journeys. And so was able to take what I wanted to do and to help me to synthesize it into a practical curriculum that could have some value. But I think, again, it's just being there with 15 men at the first one and being able to help them to tap into some of these communication protocols for authentic, emotion-centric communication, allowing them to simply ask bigger questions about the influences that have developed their sense of masculinity, their relationship with their fathers, their relationships with friends growing up, the inculcation of society, a deeper connection with their identity, and fundamentally the malleability of identity. And I always look at something that's really formative to kind of our curriculum is something called the identity model of change. Mm-hmm. And so the identity model of change basically states that at the end of the day, people do the things that align with who they think they are, mm-hmm. that our sense of self, our identity is the most influential driver of our behavior. Mm-hmm. And we oftentimes think about it first through the lens of strategies and tactics, which is if I want to do this thing, if I want to feel this way, I'll think about like, what is it that I need to do, when I need to do it, here's how I want to do it in the moment. And strategy and tactics are great and very helpful, but ultimately, mm-hmm. if our identity is out of whack, if we have a sense of ourselves, like, you know, if we grew up a certain way and men had to act a certain way to mm-hmm. establish esteem in their communities, and that involved womanizing or fighting or talking shit to other people, mm-hmm. and so we say like that's what it means to be a man, then if we've interpreted and adopted that identity, then we'll kind of perpetrate those behaviors, even if intellectually it doesn't align with mm-hmm. our values. And so what's powerful about masculinity, it's just this very specific sliver of our sense of self. And what happens on these retreats is that I think what we try to show men is that oftentimes we adopt a lot of these beliefs about what it means to be a man. And that when we can inspect those, when we can decondition them and start to reconstruct our masculine identity on our own terms, what we then show ourselves is that the entire identity is malleable. Of not just what does it mean to be a man, but what does it mean to be a good person? And that I get to construct that on my own terms. And when we're more conscious about really developing that, like what are the values that are central to my way of being? What are the beliefs mm-hmm. that I hold to be true? What am I connected to that's greater than myself? That when we can connect men to that deeper, more aligned sense of self, and we put mm-hmm. them into a community of other men that are living in a similar way, really beautiful things happen for individuals and also on a collective societal level.
So beautiful. I have one last question for you, because I know you have awesome things happening the rest of the day as well. And I appreciate your time. You have a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in a world where we're coming into a different place for men. What are some things that you can maybe speak to about the power as parents or as fathers, as men in our kids' lives to help set a tone that is healthier in a parenting sense, not just a adult male to an adult male? What are some of those things that you can maybe kind of enlighten us on or give some thought for us?
Yeah, I had an experience that was really influential in passing with probably one of the more successful executive coaches on the planet. It's this guy named Brian Franklin. He coaches like Reed Hoffman, sorry, not Reed Hastings from LinkedIn, and like a lot of other kind of Silicon Valley elites. And I was asking him about parenting. And like at the time, I think my son was probably 3 or so. And I asked him, like, what's one of the most like transformative things that you've been able to do with your son. And he talked about the power of instilling. He looked at, he said, what would be the beliefs that I could offer my son that would offer him just like the most rewarding life? And if you think about that, I think the power of beliefs, again, it's like the, we don't interact with the world as it is. We interact with the world as we are and as we think the world is. Mm-hmm. And so our beliefs are so powerful for engineering behavior, similarly to identity. And so he talked about these different beliefs that he would offer to his son, like things like, anyone I meet can love me, mm-hmm. right? Like I am safe, like whatever these are beliefs, right? They're not true, but they're just beliefs that we can adopt there. And so one of the things that I've done with Hero that I think is applicable to all children is this idea of like, what are the beliefs that I want to instill in them that really create their frame of reality, the world that they're operating within, that they're contributing into. And so every night when we go to sleep, we do it now where it's like call and response. So I'll say one word, he'll say one word. And we say, you are loved, you are supported, you are perfect exactly as you are, and we are safe. And it's those things, like you are loved, you are supported, you're perfect exactly as you are, and you're safe, we're safe. And so that's, I think, looking at what those beliefs are that you want to offer your children is a really powerful frame to approach there. And just again, providing them the opportunity. We have a really beautiful video that's got a lot of traction on Instagram of my ex-wife, Nikki, who I really love, our new beautiful friendship that's emerging. We love each other, talk every night. She's a boss. She's amazing and so high energy and so intense. She was a professional soccer player. She's like world-changing entrepreneur. And so we're playing soccer and she really meant well in a moment where Hero was overwhelmed. He had just joined a new league that was bigger kids. And so he comes to the sideline, he's crying and he's like, I'm scared. And Mickey's like, you're not scared. Like you got this. And like, again, like she means well, she's trying to hype him up. And I was like, hey, Mickey, like it's all good. Like, it's like, hey, Hero, you're scared right now. Like that makes so much sense that you'd be scared. Like you're going up against big kids. Of just like providing our kids with the experience where the totality of their emotions are just welcome, you know? And again, I think that those words are so beautiful of like, oh, that makes sense. You know, it makes sense that you're sad. It makes sense that you're upset. So before we try to change their behavior, just giving them the experience of like being received fully in their emotional experience is such a gift. And again, I think just will engineer them for kind of really imprinting the energy of like what it's like to like be okay being themselves in any capacity.
Yeah. And I think that that concept, like welcoming all of somebody.
Yeah.
Right. Into our circle, into our space, how they show up and not making them feel down or put away or dismissed, you know, in the last, little bit, would there be one or two or three takeaways that you would love people to hear that you haven't said yet, or things that are like your mantras or things that you hold very deep to your heart that you haven't had a chance to say?
Yeah. So I'm actually getting off of this call in a couple of minutes for a pretty monumental one in the world of Tribute, this business I've been growing over the past 9 years with my incredible co-founder, Roy Petty. And one of our mantras, and again, it comes back to gratitude. And it is, we all grew up with this statement, if you don't have anything nice to say,
don't say it at all.
Don't say it at all, right? We all know that one. And I had this, I was at Burning Man 1 year, and I remember I was giving a TEDx talk at Burning Man, and I just, someone said that, and I remember hearing it, and I was like, whoa, if you take out the don'ts, it becomes infinitely more powerful. It becomes, if you have anything nice to say it all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why don't we teach people that? Mm. Why don't we teach people that if you have appreciation for somebody, like you shared about my Instagram earlier, that made me feel so great that like my words, like some art that I create, like impact someone I don't know positively. You know, it's like, so that idea of if you have anything nice to say it all, that one of the most powerful tools that we have to create meaningful connection is simply sharing our appreciation with the people that are around us, you know? And I lost my father in March of this year. And I just posted about this for Grandparents Day, but it was mm-hmm. like, wow, like he passed away, but everything that I wanted to say to him, I had said, you know, mm-hmm. He knew how much he impacted me. He knew how much I appreciated him. And I think that like, I just try to live with that in mind within all my relationships. And it's just, you know, whether we think people are available to receive our appreciation is irrelevant. If you have anything nice to say, say it all. It's just like no reason to keep it inside of us. So that's a really simple one and a great place to start on the path to authentic communication. Is that if you have appreciation to share, start there, because there's a lot of stuff that's probably more complicated and nuanced. But if you can't just be honest about your appreciation, what does it say about the other parts of us? But start there.
Well, Andrew, I really appreciate all that you do. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for doing what you do and helping so many within their relationships, especially men in the world, to reconnect to themselves and then help them reconnect and continue connection to their people. I know you got a lot of good things going on in this amazing meeting afterwards. So thank you so much for being in the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Much appreciated. For anyone who's interested in coming on a Junto retreat, you can just go to wejunto.com. I'll send Eli a discount code. So anyone who wants to check out Tribute and create one, you can do that for free through the end of the year. And thanks so much for the conversation. Really enjoyed it.
All the best, man. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Do Therapist Season 5. Can you believe it? I can't. What a journey. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whether it's your first episode you've listened to, or you've been a follower since the beginning, or just trying to catch up, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for really jumping in on this awesome opportunity and learning experience. You know, if you have any questions, ask them. You have thoughts, say them. I didn't finish a thought, or you have more ideas of what you would like to hear, just let me know. The door is open, so to speak, so please walk right in. Tell me what you think. Again, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist, and hope that you tune in next week.